Savitri, Book 7, The Book of Yoga, Canto 3, The Entry into the Inner Countries. This is Part 1. It's on pages 488 through 491. Savitri is going to enter her subtle body because she must find her soul in the matter of her physical body. Her higher being, situated above her head, her Jiva Atman, has told her that she must find her soul. Our Jiva Atman is our own personal portion of the Atman, the great soul, which is the supreme all. The story of Savitri's life comes from one of the stories in the ancient Indian Mahabharata. Sri Aurobindo used it and enlarged upon it to create a whole book where he could rewrite all his teachings in mystic poetry. It gave him the opportunity to upgrade everything from the last level of yogic consciousness he reached each time as he was writing it. He wrote the book of Savitri's Yoga in 1947, 3 years before he left. He said he used the writing of Savitri as an experiment to see how far he could put his yogic consciousness into his writing, and he rewrote parts of it when he had new realizations. We have already seen one journey to find the soul in Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds. But it was a journey to the soul of the world, at the center of creation, deep in the world's heart. Sri Aurobindo told the story of his own yoga in Book 2 by telling the story of King Ashwapati, Savitri's father. After the king did his own yoga to realize his own soul, the king became a universal realized being. Then he did yoga for the world. He traveled to the world soul, at the center of creation, looking for the Divine Mother, because he wanted her to come to help the world, to help the world to progress more quickly. When he found her, she agreed to take birth as his daughter, Savitri, to help the world progress and to conquer death for the beautiful soul of man on earth. Sri Aurobindo wrote and rewrote Book 2 for 24 years, between 1926 and 1950. He described all the planes and parts of the being in great detail as the king experienced them. In Book 2, he wrote about both the universal planes of being and their corresponding planes in the human body. So by the time Sri Aurobindo wrote Savitri's journey to her individual human soul in Book 7, he did not have to repeat what he wrote in Book 2. The journey in Book 2 is 307 pages long. Savitri's journey to the soul in Book 7 is only 43 pages long. But if you compare it with what he wrote about the king's yoga in Book 2, It is all there in Book 7, but it is there in a very condensed way. Sri Aurobindo's focus in Book 7 is to teach us how a person feels in each plane of their own being when their soul has not yet been able to put its high influence there. So we get Savitri's subjective experience to the things that Sri Aurobindo describes. This is what we see until Savitri enters the cave of the soul, close to the end of her journey. Then Sri Aurobindo describes in detail the journey through the cave of the soul, what is in the cave of the soul, what it's like when one finds one's soul, and what happens in a person's subtle body when the soul becomes active in a person's being and can direct and guide their life. So now, at the beginning of Savitri's inner journey to find her soul, she is sitting beside her beloved husband in the dark night. They are in a simple, primitive forest hut. The monsoon storms are raging and crashing above her outside. And Savitri seeks her soul to prepare herself to face death, because she knows that the day of her husband's death is drawing near. Here is Savitri's story up to now. When Savitri became of age to marry, she was such a beautiful and accomplished person that none of the young men she met were worthy enough to marry her. So her father sent her out into the world to seek for her mate. She found Satyavan, the son of a great king who had lost his kingdom. The whole royal family were living in exile deep in the wild forest. When they met, they recognized each other as eternal soulmates who had been together life after life, and Savitri knew he was the husband she was searching for. When she told her parents about Satyavan, Narad the great sage was there, and he told her that Satyavan would die in 1 year. But Savitri believed their love was eternal and nothing could part them. So she returned to the forest to marry Satyavan and to live with him and his family. But when the year was ending and the day of Satyavan's death was drawing near, Savitri lost heart and hope. She lived in grief and sadness. One night, she heard the voice of her higher being, her personal portion of the Supreme, seated above her head. It told her that she had to rise and fulfill the destiny she was born for. She couldn't sit and nurse grief in a helpless heart. She had to remember why she came. She had to find her soul and recover her hidden self. Then she would be able to conquer death. So Savitri sat in meditation, and she had a mystic dream of man's evolution. A portion of the Divine Mother, the mighty Mother of the worlds, came down into Savitri as in its own human part. And of course, we know that she is really an incarnation of the Divine Mother, who has taken birth in order to conquer death. So we see some preparation beginning here. And Savitri began to dream of molding humanity into God's own shape. She realized that Earth had to transform herself and equal heaven. But she saw that for such spiritual change to be, the soul had to rule common nature's thoughts and fill the body and life. she saw that the inferior nature born into ignorance still took too large a place in her being. It veiled herself, and it must be pushed aside so she could find her soul. This brings us to the place in Savitri where we are now. Savitri is in meditation, trying to find her soul. She tries to make her way through her surface personality. But the great voice of her Jivatman speaks to her from secret heights of her being and tells her, quote, "For man thou seekst, not for thyself alone." The voice explains that in order to help man grow into God, God has to take on himself all of man's ignorance in order to change it. Savitri has to accept man's darkness to bring him to light. She has to accept man's sorrow to bring him to bliss. And this explains the grief that she has felt over Satyavan's death. In the human consciousness, darkness all comes from the ignorance and darkness of the inconscient matter that makes up our physical body. So the great voice tells Savitri, quote, "In matter's body find thy heaven-born soul." And Savitri saw her secret and mysterious soul like a lotus bud in the heart of her subtle being, deep inside her physical body. We're going to see what happens to this lotus bud when she gets all the way through her subtle body to find her soul. So Savitri courageously braves the resistance and the fearful guardians at the gateway to the inner life. Her will to enter is not shaken by all they do to try to stop her. Her will presses on the bars of the gate, and the gate opens. Savitri enters the inner worlds. She enters the inner worlds of her body at the opening for things to come up into the body from her subconscious. Here, she tries to find the inner self concealed in sense, because this is what is here. The subconscious is the main support of our habitual movements, especially our physical habits and our lower vital habits. So things coming up from the subconscious do not have much consciousness. For us to be fully conscious, the influence of our soul has to reach all the way down into this dense part of our inner being, so close to the subconscious and so close to the dense, gross, physical consciousness. Savitri moves on, and she crosses a perilous borderline where life, the life force in us, where life still dips down into subconsciousness, or life is just getting out of matter into the chaos of mental impulses that aren't yet an organized way of thinking. Sri Aurobindo tells us that all is here, but nothing is in its place. Savitri is still not high enough in her inner being for things to have a subtle form. As she moves on, at times an opening comes, or a door is forced. Savitri crosses through spaces of a secret self and treads in passages of inner time. And it's not an easy journey or a comfortable experience. Savitri has to be very conscious and very strong. Finally, she breaks into a form of things, a start of finiteness, a world of sense. Sri Aurobindo uses this to describe what happens when these life impulses are without the presence or the influence of the soul. He says, quote, "Soul was not there, only cries of life." We see that there is no orderly functioning of the mind either, because he says only cries of life are there. There is a danger of vital life impulses and bare elemental energies making of the sense a glory of boundless joy, a splendor of ecstatic anarchy, a mighty and mad revel of utter bliss. Then all is lost. Even when the higher vital emerges in all this, without the mind, the body doesn't have the light and the rapture of spirit sense. The body does not have the real joy of life. The inconscient and the subconscient take over our lives. Sri Aurobindo then describes a state of madness when a person is ruled by a chaos of disordered impulses in which no light can come, no joy, no peace. Because the soul is not there, and the mind is not putting its order in things, everything becomes unsteady, tenebrous. Everything becomes subconscious and unconscious. Savitri bravely endures her journey through this very primitive part of her inner being. And she is not overcome by any of these things. Sri Aurobindo gives us the way to get through such experiences. It's with the use of our willpower, and also by concentrating on a higher being we have faith in to help us. He speaks of the Savior name. It is not one particular name for everyone. Each person naturally chooses their own. He writes, quote, "As if in a long, endless, tossing street, hour after hour she trod without release, holding by her will the senseless mute at bay. Out of the dreadful press she dragged her will and fixed her thought upon the Savior name. Then all grew empty. She was free. A large deliverance came, a vast calm space. A while she moved through a blank tranquility of naked light from an invisible sun, a void that was a bodiless happiness." This broadcast begins and ends with the Sanskrit mantra, which was translated by Sri Aurobindo. It is from the Katha Upanishad. It is sung by an ashramite for Sunil's Savitri music, but it is not used in Book 7, the Book of Savitri's Yoga. It is used in Book 2 for King Ashwapati's Yoga. We have it here because it speaks about the soul which is seated in the heart, and how we must separate our body from our spirit by separating our soul from our body. Here is the English translation. "The Purusha, the spirit within, who is no larger than the finger of a man, is seated forever in the heart of creatures. One must separate him with patience from one's own body, as one separates from a blade of grass its main fiber. Thou shalt know him for the bright immortal, yea, for the bright immortal." Savitri, the Book of Yoga. The Entry into the Inner Countries, Part 1. At first, out of the busy hum of mind, as if from a loud thronged market into a cave, by an inward moment's magic she had come. A stark, hushed emptiness became herself. Her mind, unvisited by the voice of thought, stared at a void deep's dumb infinity. Her heights receded, her depths behind her closed. All fled away from her and left her blank. But when she came back to herself of thought, once more she was a human thing on earth, a lump of matter, a house of closed sight, a mind compelled to think out ignorance, a life force pressed into a camp of works, and the material world her limiting field. Amazed, like one unknowing, she sought her way out of the tangle of man's ignorant past that took the surface person for the soul. Then a voice spoke that dwelt on secret heights. For man thou seekst, not for thyself alone. Only if God assumes the human mind and puts on mortal ignorance for his cloak and makes himself the dwarf with triple stride, can he help man to grow into the God? As man disguised, the cosmic greatness works, and finds the mystic inaccessible gate, and opens the immortal's golden door. Man, human, follows in God's human steps. Accepting his darkness, thou must bring him to light. Accepting his sorrow, thou must bring him to bliss. In matter's body, find thy heaven-born soul. Then Savitri surged out of her body's wall and stood a little span outside herself and looked into her subtle being's depths. And in its heart, as in a lotus bud, divined her secret and mysterious soul. At the dim portal of the inner life that bars out from our depths the body's mind, and all that lives but by the body's breath, she knocked and pressed against the ebony gate. The living portal groaned with sullen hinge. Heavily reluctant, it complained, inert against the tyranny of the spirit's touch. A formidable voice cried from within, "Back, creature of earth, lest tortured and torn thou die." A dreadful murmur rose like a dim sea. The serpent of the threshold hissing rose, a fatal guardianhood with monstrous coils. The hounds of darkness growled with jaws agape, and trolls and gnomes and goblins scowled and stared, and wild beast roarings thrilled the blood with fear, and menace muttered in a dangerous tongue. Unshaken, her will pressed on the rigid bars. The gate swung wide with a protesting jar. The opponent powers withdrew their dreadful guard. Her being entered into the inner worlds. In a narrow passage, the subconscious gate, she breathed with difficulty and pain, and strove to find the inner self concealed in sense. Into a dense of subtle matter packed, a cavity filled with a blind mass of power, an opposition of misleading gleams, a heavy barrier of unseeing sight, she forced her way through body to the soul. Across a perilous borderline she passed, where life dips into the subconscious dusk, or struggles from matter into chaos of mind, a swarm with elemental entities and fluttering shapes of half-bodied thought and crude beginnings of incontinent force. At first, a difficult narrowness was there, a press of uncertain powers and drifting wills. For all was there, but nothing in its place. At times an opening came, a door was forced. She crossed through spaces of a secret self and trod in passages of inner time. At last she broke into a form of things, a start of finiteness, a world of sense. But all was still confused, nothing self-found. Soul was not there, but only cries of life. A thronged and clamorous air environed her. A horde of sounds defied significance, a dissonant clash of cries and contrary calls. A mob of visions broke across the sight. A jostled sequence, lacking sense and sweet, feelings pushed through a packed and burdened heart. Each forced its separate, inconsequent way, but cared for nothing but its ego's drive. A rally without key of common will, thought stared at thought and pulled at the taut brain, as if to pluck the reason from its seat and cast its corpse into life's wayside drain. So might forgotten lie in nature's mud, abandoned, the slain sentinel of the soul. So could life's power shake from it mind's rule, nature renounce the spirit's government, and the bare elemental energies make of the sense a glory of boundless joy, a splendor of ecstatic anarchy, a revel, mighty and mad, of utter bliss. This was the sense's instinct, void of soul, or when the soul sleeps hidden, void of power. But now the vital Godhead wakes within and lifts the life with the supernal's touch. But how shall come the glory and the flame if mind is cast away into the abyss? For body without mind has not the light, the rapture of spirit sense, the joy of life. All then becomes subconscient, tenebrous. Inconscience puts its seal on nature's page. Or else a mad disorder whirls the brain, posting along a ravaged nature's roads a chaos of disordered impulses in which no light can come, no joy, no peace. This state now threatened, this she pushed from her. As if in a long, endless, tossing street, one driven mid a trampling, hurrying crowd, hour after hour she trod without release, holding by her will the senseless mute at bay. Out of the dreadful press she dragged her will and fixed her thought upon the Savior name. Then all grew still and empty. She was free. A large deliverance came, a vast calm space. A while she moved through a blank tranquility of naked light from an invisible sun, a void that was a bodiless happiness, a blissful vacuum of nameless peace.